Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here on Sports Time Radio, I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, since it is Wednesday, the new blog did go up over there this morning, so if you haven't managed to get over there and check it out, do that whenever you get the opportunity. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you can hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, of course, Dan and I would greatly appreciate that. We still haven't figured out why Mr. Fantasy doesn't, but I think we're to the point where we've given up on that. Of course, don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. You can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at
Dan the Man with three.
So, all right. Well, you know, Dan, I was fumbling around, you know, a little bit this afternoon like I like to do and see what's going on and who's talking about what when it comes to baseball. And I'm sure as any actual baseball fan knows, James Paxton of the Mariners threw a no-hitter last night against the Toronto Blue Jays. It was the third no-hitter of the season, and in an odd, very odd kind of stat, and they've all happened in different countries. But the point I wanted to ask you about here was the fact that these gentlemen were talking about Paxton's no-hitter and saying because strikeout rates are up so much that it's actually devalued a little bit, and they believe these are going to happen more often. Are you buying devalued no-hitters because of launch angles and increased strikeout rates? Because obviously strikeouts increase because of launch angles.
How can you say that when, what would you say, almost 85% of all pitchers don't make it to the seventh inning?
Yeah, you know, and again, the unique thing about Paxton's no-hitter was he threw it himself with less than 100 pitches. It actually took him 99 pitches to get the no-hitter.
Wow.
And his last three pitches on the gun were 98, 99, and 100. So he still had stuff. He just wasn't hanging on. So, but yeah, I guess I find it interesting because, you know, these blowhards would have been jumping up and down if this had happened in the Sox-Yanks series, Dan, if one of those guys had thrown a big no-no. They would be talking about it being the greatest game in baseball history. You know, it's baffling to me that while baseball is a regional sport for fans, because, you know, you have your teams in your area that you are diehard for and you're going to root for, even if you move away, you know, the majority of people stick with those teams, henceforth the draw in places like Miami where nobody shows up to the games. You know, but it is obviously televised nationally. So you should be able, and guys who do this for a living, I believe, should have a much bigger appreciation for the game. And now you and I could sit here and say we do this for a living because we're here 5 days a week, but sadly, nobody's paying us quite yet, and we're not on a major network because you damn well know I'd get us fired within a week. So, you know, I these guys baffle me, Dan, because it's their job. And, you know, now maybe you and I are unhappy in our jobs, but, you know, you're humping the 9-to-5 gig, and I got to get up in the middle of the night to go to work. So, you know, maybe there's a little reason you and I are a little unhappy, but you would think these guys would, you know, while they're not athletes, would almost be living a kind of a dream, right? Getting to cover and talk about baseball?
Well, not only that, I mean, depending on who they are, they're traveling with teams. They're going to the stadiums. They're getting, you know, all access to the stadiums. And to the players, the coaches, the whole nine.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of, you know, it, you know, because here, you know, I'm obviously, you know, I'm enthralled because it's a Mariner who threw the no-hitter, and, you know, it's the sixth one in team history. So, you know, I was pretty happy about that they were, you know, rolling along. And, you know, of course, I want them to do good because they've got to find a way to catch the Astros and all that other fun stuff. But, you know, and the odd part, Dan, is I think these same, you know, jerkwads really enjoyed the fact that the Dodgers threw a no-hitter using four pitchers, because that's what the game has evolved into now. You know, like you said, pitchers rarely get to the seventh, let alone the sixth inning now. You know, the big thing now is, well, we don't want them to have to face the other team's order for the third time, because that's when they're going to get to them. You know, either you're rolling or you're not rolling. You know, I mean, obviously Dylan Bundy wasn't rolling last night. He didn't get an out. It probably won't happen to Dylan Bundy in his career again, because he is a very good pitcher. It just wasn't his night last night. So, it's baffling listening to these guys. Now, you know, tomorrow they could completely change their tune and forget about what they said. And it's just kind of like, oh, God, just shut up. And, you know, talk about what a great game it is. I don't want to hear the negatives because it didn't happen in a Sox-Yanks game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was interesting last night. I was listening as I was at the gym after the Cubs game ended. I was listening to the White Sox game, and I believe I was listening to the Sox broadcast. And, I mean, they could be a little dry, but they did get into some major baseball talk. And, you know, one of the things they brought up, which I found interesting, and they would know this a little bit more than, you know, maybe any other, you know, maybe other than some of the other announcers or even national guys who just cover the sport, they brought up Justin Verlander. You know, we know the time that he spent with the Tigers, and obviously being in the same division as the White Sox, they, with the 18 games, I'm sure they've seen him at least four or five times a season. But, you know, they brought up the fact that Verlander starts off his pitching, and he's not throwing you complete gas, where his speed comes up, you know, more in the seventh and eighth innings, where he knows how to more or less control, or, you know, get himself through. He's not gassing himself out in the first two innings. And you've got to imagine, right, that's got to be part of what the issue is. I mean, how many times have we seen that so far with Yu Darvish? I mean, he looked great for four, and then a couple of guys into that fifth inning, and all of a sudden he's completely lost it.
Yeah, it literally looks like he's out of gas, and you just can't figure out how or why. You know, I don't get it. It all goes back to how they're trained coming up through the minors. You know, and I mean, if you're, and you know, I don't know, you know, baby's probably not the right word. I think it would be better served as saying they're protected. You know, and like they don't let these guys throw and grow and, you know, establish themselves as pitchers. I mean, you know, now in the minors, you hit that five inning mark and you're out of the game. You know, now that's not going to develop you. It's not going to teach you how to win. And, it, you know, it's definitely not going to teach you how to battle when maybe your best stuff is starting to slip. And you've got to rely on maybe location or a secondary pitch to start getting guys out. You know, by then you're in the bull, you know, you're in the clubhouse with your, you know, your arm on ice, and the bullpen is taking care of it. You know, and I get, okay, well, there's greater chance of the guy being hurt, but you know, there's ways to manage that too. You know, stay away from the damn breaking stuff, and you know, let him work on the gap. You know, let him see if he can locate the fastball and throw the changeup for strikes. So, you know, I mean, there's ways to do all this, but, teams are just intent on, you know, well, we're going to protect them, and we're not going to let them do this. But that's how you grow into an elite pitcher, and, you know, I just don't know if we're not going to get those anymore, Dan. I mean, we may be seeing the last of actual elite starting pitching where a guy can go out and give you seven or eight innings at times.
I mean, how about, did you figure James Paxton to be a guy who can go that route?
You know, there was talk, I think you and I discussed it just a little bit at the beginning of the baseball season. There were a lot of local Seattle columnists who wanted him to be the opening day starter over Felix. They really believe he's got ace stuff, and he's the heir apparent to the King's throne, so to speak, up there. You know, the problem, of course, has been, you know, he's battled the injury bug. You know, he hasn't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I'm going to have to, while we're chatting here about him, let me Bing his stats, because, you know, Dan loves Bing. You still get points for that, so I'm doing it right here. Is that how it works out for you?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, because I don't believe he's made 30 starts in his career in a season. Yeah, here you go, Dan. The highest start total he had was back in 2017 when he made just 24 starts. Last year he made just 8, it was last year, 2017 last year. Before that it was 2013-13, and then he came up for a short bit in 2013 where he just made 4 starts in September. So, you know, you're looking at a guy who's working on his 6th season, and counting the 8 starts he's made this year, he has 82 career starts. You know, I mean, he's not even to 100 yet. The most innings he's thrown in a season is 136. That was last year.
Hmm.
So, I mean, do...
Not much at all.
Do we have enough... Yeah, I mean, do you have enough numbers there for you to kind of condone him as an ace? I mean, I think I would like to see him do it an entire season. You know, they you know, obviously we hear the prospect talk and stuff, and you know, I mean, like using the White Sox, you know, Lucas Giolito is supposed to be an ace. Well, we haven't seen it yet because he's still developing. Maybe someday he's an ace, but you're never really an ace right out of the gate. I mean, you can jump on any Met pitcher you want, be it DeGrom, Syndergaard, Weaver, or now, you know, Matt Harvey, who's a Cincinnati Red. At one point in time, they were all going to be aces, and, you know, they've been hurt the majority of their careers. So who knows what we'll get out of them. I mean, it would be great if he develops into it, because, you know, the King is, you know, sooner or later going to be gone. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you have confidence in him developing from what you know so far?
And well, and like you
or
said,
is there a better
chance?
Yeah.
We don't know a whole lot. You know, for all we know, he could.
Yeah, you know. There,
you know, pull a film.
Depends upon the damn. Yeah, there you go. That's a good. You know, that this may be it for him. So, you know, just
but,
kinda...
you know, I mean, for your sake and for the sake of just for baseball, I hope he kind of, you know, I'm for him. Hope he, you know, kind of continues to keep rolling on and doesn't have an injury. So that, you know, next year when you go to draft him, he won't be available because somebody else will.
And he'll try to run the price up on me. Oh, so, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you know, humorously, Dan, with Paxton, in his last start, he had 16 strikeouts through, I think it was 7, and they took him out because obviously his pitch count was a little high, and everybody claimed that they didn't leave him in to try to get to 20. So, you can't really win here. It's like, you want to see him get to these numbers, but then you complain that they left him in and his pitch count got to this. Oh, but, you know, it's just kind of like it's neither here nor there. You know, and these guys just kind of ride the fence and they pick whatever side they, you know, they think they can milk the story out of that's going to get people to, you know, rally behind him and be like, oh, yeah, you were wrong. You don't know how to run the team. You know, but then if he goes out there trying to get 20 strikeouts and blows out his arm, the question becomes, well, what the hell is he doing in the game? So, you know, yeah. Who knows?
Well, since you're on Seattle, when it comes to them, what do you think is going to put them over the hump? I mean, to even maybe land that wild card spot, because I think they'd be chasing that more than, you know, winning the division.
the Astros going back to the National League?
Well, you know, I mean,
no, you know, to be fair,
I like, yeah,
you know, they're,
I mean,
yeah, you know, they're only, you know, they're only 2.5 games behind the Astros right now. Of course, obviously, it's, you know, it's really early. They're a game behind the Angels and 2.5 behind the Astros. But yeah, you just got to kind of wonder. I mean, you know, obviously Paxton has been really good his last two starts. Felix has looked better, but you know, he struggled early. But you know, after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. Mike Leake has been a solid pitcher throughout his career. Man, he's been terrible with Seattle. Like this year, he's 3-3 with a 6.28 ERA. You know, Marco Gonzalez was a big time prospect for the Cardinals. And I do start to wonder now, Dan, anytime the Cardinals give up on a prospect, I think everybody in baseball should get the hint, because these guys just never pan out when the Cardinals decide they're done with them. You know, yeah. He's been really up and down, and, you know, they can't seem to find that number five. You know, it keeps looking like they want to give the job to Ariel Miranda, but he won't take it. You know, Ramirez has been given a couple shots. He can't get the job done. So I don't know where they're going to lock down a fifth starter at. I think tonight it's Wade LeBlanc getting the start. You know, and he's 33 here. He is left-handed, so that's, I'm sure he'll hang around for 10 more years in the game. But, you know, he's been a journeyman for a long time through multiple teams. I think he spent a little time with the Yankees and a couple other teams last season. But, yeah, he's getting the go tonight for them. And, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, their day-to-day lineup, there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, the nine guys they're going to run out there. But yeah, you know, pitching is the key.
So maybe the team going after Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, you know, if they could somehow manage to land him and he was healthy, I mean, they could definitely use a guy like that. You know, if you know, you could get those guys on the trading block. You know, of course, I don't know what they would, you know, have to give up for him. You'd probably have to, you know, mortgage your future. Maybe Dan Hogelbach could go in return. So.
Oh, and that former Cubs catcher, Miguel Montero, right?
Is he hanging around with them? I don't see him listening with them. So.
No, I'm just being sarcastic, because you remember when the big talk was the trade for Mike Trout, and what would the Cubs give for Mike Trout? Well, that would be Miguel Montero and three other guys that nobody wants.
Yeah, that was like the Chris Sale trade, where it was David Ross and a couple other bench guys for Chris Sale. So
yeah,
you know.
Now,
but hubris. Oh no, go ahead.
Okay, I was gonna bring up. I don't know how much of the Cubs Marlins game you watched last night, but with Victor Caratini at behind the plate. There was a ball thrown to him. I don't remember who it was by. It was a nice throw. I didn't believe it was Zobrist out there. I was kind of surprised if it was. I didn't go back and look. But he was, you know, what'd you say, a few feet in front of home plate on the line. And Derek Dietrich, obviously, that would have been more towards the point of his slide had he been able to. He didn't completely knock him down, but he gave him a nice little old school kind of barrel. You know, it wasn't brutal. It was enough to kind of knock him back a little bit and say, hey, they're completely blocking the plate. You know, the bench is cleared. Jose Urania kind of was able to get Caratini back. And I think in this situation, neither team really wanted anybody to get hurt, you know, whether fighting, but I don't even think it's so much to hurt the other team wanted a suspension on the side. I don't know. I didn't really know how to take this one. you know, what did you see?
You know, I really think Caratini overreacted a little bit, because you got to remember, just a few years ago, Dietrich would have tried to blow him into the front first row of the stands and knock the ball away from him.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's really what it was setting up like. It was setting up like an old, you know, an old school, I'm going to wipe out the catcher, you know, Pete Rose taking out Ray Fosse in the All-Star game type of deal. You know, and you can't do that anymore. But, I like the fact that Dietrich just didn't give himself up, and it wasn't anything dirty. You know, it was kind of a forearm shiver to the chest. And I'm guessing it probably caught Caratini more by surprise, because, you know, in the wussed out version that baseball is today, guys normally just give themselves up and say, hey, tag me, here I am. So I think it caught him kind of by surprise, and I don't even understand why it escalated to the guys having to get off the bench. You know, obviously the best part of the whole brawl was Chris Bryant tickling Starlin Castro.
Oh, that did happen. I thought that was just a joke.
Yeah. No, they had the big little schmoz there, the schmoz right around home plate there, and Bryant reached under one of the other guys and started tickling Castro, and it was, you know, I mean, that brought some levity to the situation, because I think most guys realized it was incredibly stupid that they were out of the dugout, because this wasn't one of those times where anybody needed to go out there. Caratini just needed to walk away, and Dietrich needed to go back to his dugout, and we'd have been just fine moving along. But obviously, you know, once Caratini gets in his face, nobody's going to back down. So now you've got an issue on your hands, because I really just believe he overreacted. You know, Dietrich wasn't trying to hurt him. He didn't even make a great attempt to knock the ball away from him. It was just almost like he didn't know what to do, and he wasn't even running full speed by the time he made contact. It was more of a, here, I'm going to push you with my forearm. And I think if Caratini would have been ready for it, he probably wouldn't even have moved.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just one of those odd situations, but that's how things go now. You know, everything's an indictment on you, and you know, it's like, let's just play the damn game. So.
But yeah, well, you know, like what I noticed most of all though was neither side seemed to really want to get into it over it, and you know, for the first time in a while, I've seen, you know, guys from opposite teams kind of wrangling. You know, like I said, Urania was the first one in between Caratini and kind of didn't really push him away, but just kind of moved him out of the situation. I don't know, you know, obviously I couldn't hear or, you know, read lips as to what was said between the two. And I forget what Cubs player, I don't know if it was Rizzo or, you know, someone kind of pushed, but, you know, guided Dietrich away from the situation. And, you know, that was one of those situations I thought was, you know, like you said, maybe Caratini overreacted, but I felt like overall both teams' players handled it very professionally and very, very well, you know. Because, Dietrich could have really knocked him on his ass if he wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was, you know, there was no reason for that to escalate. It was fine how it was, and you know, that's good enough. You know, let's, you know, let them move on and play the game. So, but you asked me how much of the game I saw. I did see Justin Bour homer, which was, of course, the only homer I hit in FanDuel Home Run Derby, because who didn't homer last night, Dan? That's right, Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. So I got one homer yesterday. I didn't even bother to look to see who won, because I just didn't care. So, yeah. You know, sadly, I was unable to use Trout today because he had an afternoon game, but I don't believe he homered again. I do have Harper in my lineup, along with two other guys. I think I have Gary Sanchez. I'm going with him tonight, and I don't remember who my third guy is. So, you know, I'll have to look later, and we can figure out who it is. No, they're in forever. Harper and Trout in my home run lineup.
No, I just put mine together right before the podcast, and they said he's not starting, so you better take him out.
Oh, damn it. Now I got to go look and see if he's freaking in the lineup.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, you better hurry.
Well, hell, I should probably leave him in. He'll do as well as he always does for me, right? So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, a zero is a zero no matter who you get it from. Well, luckily, it's a late swap league, so I could get in and do it later if I had to. Let's see. He is not. I went with Mikel Franco was my other guy. Yeah, but now I don't know who to pick. Jeez.
Just don't go with Ozzy Albies or Didi.
No, I won't. I won't. So I have Mikel Franco, Gary Sanchez. What other game do I want to be in here? Let's see. How about the Braves and the Rays? Let's find a Brave. Is Jose Bautista up tonight? Maybe I'll go with Jose.
What about Acuna?
There you go.
You can go with him.
Jose Bautista. Yeah, Jose Bautista's hit fifth for the Braves tonight. I'm going with him. So there you go.
Actually playing? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, he's been playing third base for him on a regular basis. So.
Joey Bad?
You know.
Mr. Former Toronto Blue Jay, I'm not going to give a hometown discount.
Yep.
I want $30 million a year.
Interesting. I have Bautista, Franco, and Sanchez, and they're all hitting fifth for their team. Not that that means anything to me. That's just another zero for me, but you know how that works out.
You got to play the odds, right?
Yeah. You know. So, well, now, humorously, I did have the same. I had the Sox Yankees game on for a while. There you go. I had the Sox Yanks game on for a little while last night, and it was Bob Costas and Jim Cott doing the game. And now, if you don't know who Jim Cott is, people, go look it up. He actually made his major league debut in 1959, and he hung around till 1983. So he was in the game for quite a while. Along the way, he was a three-time All-Star, won 16 Gold Gloves, and picked up. Finally, back in 1982, I believe. Now, obviously, Dan, Todd is an old school guy. He has those old school values. So they've got the Yankees have a situation where they have a runner on first, second, and I don't believe there was anybody out. And Miguel Andujar is up, and I think he was either down 0-1 or 0-2 in the count. And Todd's going through the spiel explaining to Cott how this is the perfect time for Andujar to try to push the ball over to the right side of the field to get those two runners moved up into scoring position for the next guy. On the next pitch, Dan, Andujar stepped in the bucket almost completely out of the batter's box, swung as hard as he could, and fouled the ball off down the left field line. So he had absolutely zero thoughts of trying to hit the ball the other way in that situation. Prototypical baseball now, Dan, all he was thinking about was the three-run bomb. So, and I believe he did go on to strike out and not advance the runners at all in any way, shape, or form. So I thought that was pretty humorous that, you know, a guy who's hung around, you know, who managed to hang around, 25 major league seasons, thought something was a good idea, but some young kid who's really in his first year, because he was only called up after opening day, decided he'd prefer to hit the three-run bomb. So, well, welcome to baseball, people. That's what you get.
But, I mean, is that really his fault, or is he a product of his environment where he's taught to only
do obviously it's it's a product of coaching now and the fact that everybody is now bought into strikeouts don't matter, and all we want is, home runs. You know, that's all that matters. That's why baseball is easily on their way to setting a strikeout record. I mean, they're going to blow that record out of the water. It's not even going to be close this year. I mean, if you sneeze and you're not paying attention, there's – two or three pitchers on the verge of double-digit strikeouts every day. I think, what did Aaron Nola get last night? He got like 12 or 14 or something for the Phillies against the Giants, who usually don't strike out that much. you know, the Giants were one of the few teams along with the Royals that didn't put up a lot of big-time strikeout numbers, but now it's even caught up with them. And, you know, I mean, you know, they, you know, all they talk about, Dan, is, well, you know, let's speed up the game. It's got to be played faster, blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't the game be a lot more exciting for people to watch if the ball was actually put in play?
Yeah. Well, in the Giants' defense, which you had to have known I've gone there, I don't know if you were watching it or if you probably didn't get to see any highlights because it was the Phillies and the Giants. But I went straight to MLB.tv, went to my game recap, and watched Aaron Nola's performance. And, I mean, I think one of the challenges yesterday is, well, and I'm surprised this guy's arm is still attached. If you watch that release and that curveball, you don't know where the hell that ball is going. He has a pretty mystifying release angle. You had to put that angle in there, right? I mean, he's, you know, not coming over the top like, you know, some guys might do with their fastball, completely over the top. He's not going completely sidearm where, you know, we've seen a handful of those guys. He's kind of got this delivery where when he's throwing, especially when he throws that curveball, it's, let's just say it's between the 12 and the 3. It's really not a, you know, if you look at the clock, it's in between those two, and it's just kind of a bizarre thing to see. I don't know if that's a delivery on every, you know, every day, but I mean, he was pretty on fire last night. But you are right, you know, the strikeouts weren't really a Giant thing, and you've got to imagine with the addition or subtraction of guys that may or may not have been brought up in their system, if that's contributing to it at all.
Yeah, no, I'm disappointed, Dan, because you didn't give me enough credit. I actually did hunt down the Aaron Nola highlights because he was my pitcher in FanDuel yesterday, so I wanted to know how he did. He racked up 60 points for me, Dan. I actually think he had 61. My hitters were so bad, I didn't even money. I think I had one guy score decent for me after him. You know, like Mike Trout was a huge disappointment. You know, he had 12.2 points. Freddie Freeman seems to be the new guy I've cursed because now anytime I put Freddie Freeman in my lineup, he is just a complete bust. You know, he was one of the guys, you know, obviously I do as much research as I can before jumping on and throwing a FanDuel lineup together. I just don't magically pull names out of hats because I can't win anything like that. You know, and he was one of the guys everybody was kind of on thinking he had the possibility of going out and having a big, big day. Well, you know, Freddie's big day. Oh, no, wait, I did take Freddie out of my lineup. So, but yeah, the only guy, Francisco Lindor was really good for me. But Ronald Guzman, Jason Kipnis, Kyle Seager all got 3 points for me. And Michael Conforto, Michael A. Taylor, and Jose Reyes didn't score. So I got, and I was even wrong about Nola. Nola got me 64 points. For my total, Dan, I ended up with 109.9.
Well, you did a lot better than me because I didn't even look at who didn't score what. All I know is that one I put in had 68 points and the other one had 73. So... yeah, that was...
So, yeah, and,
fun.
You know, I've got to figure out, or we've got to figure out, Dan, what the hell we're doing wrong. Because the guy who won the league, that free roll last night, picked up the $100, scored 251 points. And somehow he knew that the Royals were going to get the Dylan Bundy. Remember, before we went off the air yesterday, I mentioned that the Royals hit 4 home runs in the first inning. And Mike Moustakas, Alex Gordon, and Jorge Soler were 3 of 4 guys who hit them. All 3 of them are in this guy's lineup from last night. And he also had Whit Merrifield. So somehow he knew to get on board against Dylan Bundy, which I didn't want to do because Bundy is a pretty good pitcher. So 1, 2, 3, 4. I am also wondering, Dan, did they change the rule? Because he's got five Royals in his lineup. I thought you were only allowed to take a maximum of four guys per team.
Four. That's what I thought, what? Too. So that's
right,
what I thought,
but he's
too.
Got five. He had Danny Duffy as his pitcher, Whit Merrifield at second, Moustakas at third, and then Gordon and Soler in his outfield. Just so you know, Dan, the other guys he had were, he had your guy Adrian Gonzalez at first base, but he had a rough night. He only scored 6.5 points. He also had Aaron Judge, who scored the same, but then he backed that up with Giancarlo Stanton, who went off for 46 points last night.
Well, and don't forget, Moustakas hit two, Giancarlo hit two.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, Moustakas put up 50.9 points. You know, Duffy gave him 34, which is plenty as a pitcher, you know, to get that win. But, yeah, now I'm going to have to email FanDuel now and find out why he had five Royals in his lineup and see if they get back to me. But since I am floating around here, Dan, I want to look and see who won the home run contest, because I know it wasn't you or I. I had just the one from
zero.
Justin Bour. And, Dan, you would have needed five last night. Looks like six guys hit five bombs last night. So, the top guy, they put him obviously in no uncertain order. Stanton and Moustakas were in this guy's lineup. I assume they're going to be in all five of these lineups here. So, all right, here's the third one. Yeah, I guess we were the only guys who weren't smart enough to take Stanton or Moustakas last night, Dan. So,
I mean, I thought about it. Not Moustakas,
yeah,
but Stanton. But I am a little early, so
yeah,
I
don't
want to go into your FanDuel lineup.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know, while Dan ventures off, we can cover what I'm trying to do tonight. We'll see if this works out for me. We can only hope, right? Of course, I have to find it. Where is it here? Where's my – oh, that's right. It just technically it just started because it's after 6 o'clock. So let's slide in here and hunt down my lineup tonight. Here we go. All right. I am going, believe it or not, I'm going with Alex Wood on the mound tonight. I know it's a tough matchup against the Diamondbacks, but $8,400. I thought he was a pretty good value. So I'm going to go that route, plug him in. It, you know, obviously it also gives me lineup flexibility. Wondering why I was thinking of Freddie Freeman earlier, because he's in my lineup at the catcher first base position tonight. So that means he'll probably put up a big zero because I just seem to kill Freddie. I don't know why. He's hitting third for the Braves tonight. He cost me $4,500. Second base, I'm going with Eduardo Nunez of the Red Sox. He's hitting seventh tonight. He cost me $2,800. He's actually in 4% of the lineup so far tonight. Third base, I've got Josh Donaldson. He cost me $4,000. He hit second for the Blue Jays tonight. And 27.9% of the people agree with me. Shortstop, I got Manny Machado. He cost me $4,500. He's hitting third for the Orioles tonight. And he's owned by 38.7% of the people playing. So there you go. That's kind of nice, right? My outfield starts with Nelly Cruz of the Mariners, or Nelson Cruz, depending on how you want to look at it. He cost me $3,700. He's hitting cleanup for the Mariners tonight. And 29.1% of the people own Nelly Cruz. Back in the Phillies-Giants game, I seem to be picking the wrong Philly outfielders, but I'm trying it again. Tonight it's Aaron Altherr, who's hitting second for the Phillies. Cost me $2,400, and he's in 18.1% of lineups tonight. So that's actually pretty good. Most people just think he's a value. As you know, I always seem to hunt down one value pick because I spend my money all over the place. Tonight, that value pick is Craig Gentry of the Orioles. He's hitting eighth for them. He only cost me $2,000, and he's actually in 1.4% of the lineups tonight. So there you go. And then I wrap it up with my utility guy. It's Mike Zunino tonight. I normally don't use catchers, but again, in my research, I saw some, you know, a lot of positives about Zunino tonight. He's hitting eighth for the Mariners. He's only at $2,700, and he's in 4.9% of the lineups on FanDuel tonight. So, yeah, here's your recap. I got Alex Wood pitching, Freddie Freeman in the catcher first base slot, Eduardo Nunez at second, Josh Donaldson at third, Manny Machado at short. My outfield is Nelson Cruz, Aaron Altair, and Craig Gentry. And my utility guy is Mike Zunino. So there you go. We'll see how it goes. And I know, you know, some of the games are obviously underway, but hopefully that will work out to me. But of course, you know, being Wednesday, a lot of games are already in the books. So here's what we got for finals so far. The Cincinnati Reds beat the New York Mets 2-1 in 10 innings. Yeah, who'd have thought we'd have got a 2-1 game in Cincinnati on a nice day? Raisel Iglesias got the win for Cincy. A.J. Ramos got hung with the loss for the Mets. The Cleveland Indians beat the Milwaukee Brewers 6-2. Carlos Carrasco gets the win there. Junior Guerrero takes the loss for the Brewers. Guerrero been pitching pretty well there. Another extra inning game here. The Texas Rangers beat the Detroit Tigers 5-4 in 10 innings. It's Keno Kella got the win for the Rangers, while Warwick Sapold took the loss for the Tigers. The White Sox, their bullpen blew another game for them. They were up 4-0 at one point in this game. Pittsburgh came back to win 6-5. Richard Rodriguez got the win. Nate Jones was one of the bullpen guys who helped give it up for the Sox. He took the loss. And Felipe Vasquez got the save for the Pirates. The other Chicago team, the Cubs, putting up big numbers. Yeah, all the Cubs offense needed to get healthy was have the Marlins come to town. That seemed to kind of straighten them out. Yeah, the Cubs beat them 13-4 today. Jose Quintana picked up the win, while Dan's guy Wei Ying Chin got roughed up and suffered the loss. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim shut out the Colorado Rockies. They got a big 8-0 win. Jaime Barrera picked up the win there, and Tyler Anderson took the loss. And our final from the early day games, there you go. The Houston Astros beat the Oakland A's 4-1. Garrett Cole grabbed the win there. Daniel Megden took the loss. And Ken Giles picked up the save for the Astros. So, yeah, there's your early Wednesday finals. And we still have some games rolling out tonight. I know just underway, the Mickey Mouse Network game of the night, of course, as Dan knows, and he can't wait to get home to watch it. Sox at Yanks. It's Rick Porcello against Masahiro Tanaka tonight. Royals at Orioles. It's Eric Skoglund and Andrew Cashner getting the starts there. Giants at the Phillies. Chris Stratton and Nick Pivetta make the starts. The Mariners at the Blue Jays. It is Wade LeBlanc, like I guessed earlier, for the Mariners. Jaime Garcia gets the start for the Blue Jays. Braves at Rays. It's Julio Teheran against Ryan Yarbrough. The Nationals are still out on the West Coast in San Diego. It's Gio Gonzalez against Joey Lucchesi, or C, I guess. And the Diamondbacks are at the Dodgers. We got Patrick Corbin against Alex Wood. So there's your finals, and then the game's coming up tonight, or some should actually just be getting rolling. So there you are.
Now, it's actually pronounced San Diego. Sorry. I guess I should get the Will Ferrell soundbite for that one, or the Anchorman, whichever you want to call it. Now, you know, as I go through every day and watch the recaps for all the games that happened the previous night, a lot of games were played last night. But, you know, just when you throw up the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers, 2 years back, you wouldn't expect it to be the situation it is. I mean, are we going to see another 27-game win streak for the Dodgers mid to late summer for them to really bounce themselves back? I mean, I know it's still pretty early. They're only a few games under 500, but to see them where they are right now, it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's a team that's had some really bad luck, you know, and that can be the key, you know, as you and I know, as much as anything else is staying freaking healthy. And, you know, you look at that team, and I mean, Justin Turner is just now starting to take batting practice. You know, we're in May 9th, and he's just starting to kind of get there. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh boy, you know, how much longer till he returns? You know, Corey Seager was Rookie of the Year, what was it, 2 years ago? And yep. He gets Tommy John. You know, I mean, Rich Hill, while he's been decent when he's pitched for the Dodgers, they can't honestly look at that as that being a good signing, because I think he spent as much time on the disabled list as he has pitching. And then now you add Clayton Kershaw of all guys. I mean, the one guy, you know, that you just don't want to lose, and you lose him. Yeah. You know, and I know Kershaw goes through these, you know, he seems to make one DL trip a season. So, you know, maybe this is his DL trip and he's getting it out of the way early in the season and, you know, he'll be fine. And they did say it's bicep tendonitis. So it's, you know, it's nothing they can't work through. You know, obviously they have the medical professionals to handle this stuff. So, you know, you figure 10 or maybe maybe he misses three starts. You know, if you're still getting 30 starts out of Clayton Kershaw, I think you're going to be okay. But, you know, right now the Diamondbacks and the Rockies just look fantastic. So, you know, you're just in one of those odd situations.
Now, you know, over the years, especially I think within the last five, I don't want to go back that far, but, you know, let's just keep it in the five-year frame. It's generally been where, you know, we have these spouts of Rocky love and Diamondback where they don't, well, I guess I shouldn't say love because they don't really get the love. They generally get the, yeah, well, I'm not buying it. Give them another 3 months and they'll be back at the bottom, sitting right above, you know, battling for third and fourth. Do you think we still have that going on this year? I mean, with the juice balls, you know, AJ Pollock definitely picked his stuff up. He seems pretty healthy. I don't really hear a whole lot about Paul Goldschmidt, but, you know, do you think, especially with the Diamondbacks, I mean, let's be honest, the Rockies, I think they have a pretty solid lineup. It all depends on their pitching. And last night, you know, John Gray, the Silver Wolf, as they call him, out there in Colorado, pitched a pretty decent game against the Angels. So he was holding up, bam. You know, you wonder if maybe he's kind of catching on and catching his groove to solidify himself to be, you know, a pretty solid starter there. But do you think the Diamondbacks have enough to maintain and stay up there?
You know, if I had to pick one team over the other, I believe the Diamondbacks are probably a little more real than the Rockies. You know, I just, you know, again, you fall into that stigma with the Rockies of how is their pitching going to hold up in that ballpark? You know, I mean, no matter what you do, it's a homer paradise. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it makes it tough to kind of believe in them. And I know, you know, Arizona, you know, you can hit your home runs there too. I mean, they're that ball flies out of there as well. But I just think when you kind of compare them, the Diamondbacks have kind of sneakily put together a really good starting rotation. You know, and that's even with the loss of, Tajon Walker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, obviously we know all about Zach Greinke, and, you know, Robbie Ray looks like, you know, the real deal. We'll have to see how he bounces back from the injury, because an oblique for a pitcher could be rough. Patrick Corbin is off. Yeah, you know, Patrick Corbin is off to a great start. So, you know, you just got to, you know, you got to see if that's where you're kind of believing. I guess my question with both these teams is when the time comes to add that guy and you got to go out and get that final piece, do they have what it takes in their system to go get a guy? You know, I know the Diamondbacks did it last year with, you know, going out and getting JD Martinez, but a lot of people say that Detroit took less than market value for him. So, you know, could they pull something off like then if they, you know, if they need that guy? And I just wonder, can either team do it?
Well, I mean, when you think about with the situation in Detroit, though, did they really have any choice but to take less than market value? You know, they knew they weren't going to re-sign him. You know, the situation they were in. I mean, the biggest acquisition they made was getting, you know, the big splash was sending Avila and Justin Wilson to the Cubs. I mean, forget about a guy, Justin Verlander. You know, that was the big one. But, you know, I mean, they were, you know, pretty much unloading as much of their assets as they could while remaining competitive for a fourth and fifth place spot.
Yeah, you know, but in those other trades, you know, they did well. You know, like they did well in the Wilson Avila trade with the Cubs, and I'm for some reason I'm drawing a blank on what they got back from Verlander. But I believe they still did well there. For whatever reason, you know, I don't know if they panicked or if they were afraid they weren't going to be able to move him. But yeah, they just kind of settled on Martinez. You know, unless maybe they saw something in the guys they got in return that they really liked, and in the end we'll all be wrong about it, which wouldn't be the first time. But, you know, I mean, that's just kind of the consensus right now.
But, you know, switching gears a little bit, I had to bring this up to you, and it just popped into my head, and I don't want to forget about it. So last night, I don't know if it was last – no, it was – yeah, it was, you know, during the podcast, before we went off the air, we were talking Royals baseball because of the 10 runs in the first inning. And then you brought up Jorge Soler's numbers, and I forget the exact batting average that he was sitting on, but it was plus 300, you know, kind of low home runs at 4 home runs and approximately 12 RBIs. Well, one of the guys, he came from the Cubs he was traded there for a guy that the Cubs decided not to re-sign. I don't know if that was really a good thing. Maybe I think they should have placed a little bit more value on a closer, especially with all the money they have. I think they're bleeding it. They could have spent it, but that's neither here nor there. So the other guy playing in the outfield for the Cubs that I still believe was brought up too early, hasn't had enough time to really learn how to play the outfield, and it was showing last night despite the win. Almost same exact line, you know, with the RBIs and the home runs. However, Ian Happ's batting average sitting at a mid to low 200s. You know, they were pretty comparable, and, you know, when I look at that, and granted I haven't seen a whole lot of Soler's defense, I still believe that Soler would have been the guy to go with over Happ. And maybe not so – maybe if he was in the infield playing at second or short and kind of – I can accept that a little bit more. But I don't know. I feel like I expect more out of an outfielder, especially for one that you're touting for so much, but really doesn't have the experience to even – you know, I could deal with the numbers, but the defense isn't there. And there was a ball hit almost to the wall, and he looked like a little leaguer. Am I too critical?
I think a little bit. He seems to be kind of your guy that you may be a little rougher on than most. Everybody seems to have that guy on a team, and I'm trying to remember who Schomburg Stews was last year, because there was a guy he just killed no matter what the guy did. Yeah, well, yeah, remember Starlin Castro? That was 2 years ago. Remember that guy? He couldn't win for losing. And Soler was a little bit in that same boat. You know, he was that guy who was kind of the scapegoat there on the team, you know, that it was, a lot of his issue, you know, was, well, you know, it's because he doesn't hustle or he doesn't do this or that. So, you know, they kind of fit in. But, you know, when it comes down to it, Soler is a better outfielder than Hop because he's been playing it longer. Mm-hmm. Will Hop eventually turn into a better outfielder? Well, we don't know. You know, we got to kind of wait and see there on how it works out. But, you know, you also have to wonder with the way the Cubs juggle guys, will he continue to be an outfielder or will we see him brought back to the infield?
Yeah. I don't know. And I guess maybe it's not so much my, you know, being too hard on him as more as the decision coming from, you know, the manager in the front office. I don't understand it. I mean, do they not see what we see? I mean, this is Major League Baseball. This is supposed to be the best, the pros. Everyone in the entire world wants to come here to play. And yet, you know, number one, you bring up a kid and just totally blow his confidence. I don't care if the entire team, you know, visits the mound during that inning. How the hell, you know, I just don't understand. I mean, you just, and then he's gone by, what, the second inning. And then to have, you know, again, on this team, a kid out there playing center field who still hasn't really learned the position. Are you jumping the gun a little too fast?
Yeah, well, you know, it'll all be better when the Cubs trade for Manny Machado.
That's right. Forgot. Straight up for Russell.
So, yeah, well, yeah, you know, that's how it's going to go. But I did want to ask you, Dan, I know we're running short on time. You know, you and I have always kind of talked about, you know, taking road trips to go see teams. I'm wondering if you would be interested in taking a road trip to see the Clem Burn Railroaders in Texas sometime this year.
Not this year. We'd have to really put that one together. That's a little bit of a ride.
Well, you know,
how would you
the reason I'm asking, Dan, well, the reason I'm asking, Dan, is because they signed 53-year-old Rafael Palmeiro yesterday, and apparently they also have his son on the team. So while Palmeiro didn't make it back, yeah, he didn't make it back into the majors like he wanted, but, yeah, he's going to get to play with his son, Patrick. So we'll have to, you know, we'll have to kind of see how it goes. They say it's about the Railroaders play about 45 minutes away from the Rangers ballpark.
Is that an affiliated team, or are they affiliated? Or
no, they are an independent team. So we may have to try to keep track and see how Rafi does. I don't see here. I was looking to see if they had a game listed or anything in the article about Palmeiro, but they do not here. Let me see if I can get some scheduling here before anything else here. Cause yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
That was, you know, he was one of my guys growing up. My dad did the home run derby. Or the home run pool at his work. You know, he worked on the docks with tons of men. He always involved me in it because he knew I loved baseball. And Palmeiro was one of my guys.
Yeah, it looks like they opened the season here May 18th against the Gold Eyes.
No, too bad they're not playing the Chicago Dogs. That would be an easier
trip. Yes, that would have been nice. Yeah, you know, maybe they'll make the trip here to, you know, Chicago. Of course, that would be a big time trip for an independent team to make. So I doubt that's going to happen, yeah. But
Rafi could pay for it.
He wanted to be in the majors, but obviously nobody took a chance on him. So he's going to settle to play in the Indy League. We'll see how he does it at 53.
Good for him.
So, all right. Well, Dan and I are leaving. That's what the music means. But hey, we're going to come back tomorrow to do this all again. While we're away though, you know what to do. Get over to sportstimeradio.com. Check out the new blog that went up this morning. Link to the Facebook page, give that a like, but remember that Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. You can hunt Dan and I down on Twitter if you'd like to do that. That would be cool. As always, don't forget, what am I forgetting? Twitter feed. Oh, yeah, don't forget, you can go over to tunein.com to listen to the podcast anytime you want. You know, I knew I was forgetting something because, Dan, I want you to tell me who wins tonight, Game 7, Predators or Jets?
La, 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 Predators. Nashville, baby. Roll out. Sportstimeradio.com.